morning to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Tuesday class. 11 January 2022. So we will be continuing our sharing from this book, the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. On the hard copy, we are on page 115. On the soft copy, I think we are on page 65. Okay, as usual, we are off the light and you will have your half an hour of awareness-based meditation first before we commence our sharing. So just relax body and mind, then silence your mind to maintain awareness within. When you are without thought, you are already aware and just let things be. Whatever arises, let it arise. Don't resist, don't fight, don't do anything. Just be a silent watcher or just be aware. The awareness is like witnessing whatever that arises. Then whatever that strikes your senses upon contact, whatever phenomena that arise, just develop awareness of it, aware, finish. Maybe tactile consciousness or whatever, just aware, finish. Then sankhara, whatever arise, let it arise, aware, finish. Come back to the silent mind to be aware. Then just let the mundane mind slow down and finally become very quiet when it returns to its original state of awareness before the thinking mind arises, before the stirring of the mundane mind arises. Then stabilize the awareness within. And after you have stabilized it, use it to meditate. So awareness-based meditation has this beautiful understanding because you are silently aware. That's why you can understand yourself very well. You can understand what is going on. You can understand how you function as a human being, what that mundane mind is all about, how you input the content of consciousness, how your mundane mind stir and react and create, respond to whatever you see, you hear, you smell, you taste, you tactile feel and think. So this is mindfulness in action. When you are mindful and aware, you can understand. Then you can use the awareness nature to insight into phenomena, to awaken to the three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkhang, anatta. So maybe I will continue from the hard copy, since we say the soft copy they don't have. I will read from here. The three divisions are literally the three stores, or what we call the three treasures. Under Theravada is called the Tipitaka. They are so called because many principles are stored inside. What is a Dhamma master? Dhamma refers to the Buddha's teaching. A master is one who serves as a good model for others. A Dhamma master bestows the Dhamma upon living being. Another definition of Dhamma master is one who takes the Dhamma as his master. There are many types of Dhamma master, but for now, a general explanation will suffice. The Dhamma master here referred to is Kumarasiva. This Sanskrit word means youth and long life. The meaning is, although Kumarasiva is a young boy, he has the manner, the virtue, and the intellectual maturity of an elder. He has the virtue, conduct of someone who has lived a long life, and so he is called the youth of long life. It was Kumarasiva then who translated from Sanskrit into Mandarin the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra. Although sutra may be translated into Mandarin, they convey the same meaning as those in the Pali Sanskrit. Why is the translator's name placed at the beginning of the sutra? You may ask. If Dhamma Master Kumarasiva has not gone to China to work on translation, the sutra would not have been transmitted to China so quickly. His name is placed at the beginning of for several reasons. On the one hand, it is to recognize his merits and virtue. On the other hand, that way he is responsible for any mistake in translation. Seeing his name, those of future generation will all remember Dhamma Master Kumarasiva and his meritorious deed. So we move on to chapter 1. Now we are at page 115, chapter 1. The wonderful Dhamma Flower Lotus Flower Sutra. Okay. Thus have I heard. At one time, the Buddha dwelt on Mount Gidrakuta near the city of the king's abbot. Together we were gathering our great bhikkhus, 12,000 in all. All were arahants or arahats whose outflow had ceased and who had no further afflictions. Having attained self-benefit, they had cast off the bond of all existence, and their heart had attained self-mastery. Their names are Achinyata Kondanya, Maha Kasapa, Uruveva Kasapa, Gaya Kasapa, Nadi Kasapa, Shariputta, Great Mongalana, Maha Kaya Yana, Anuruddha, Kapina, Gavampati, Revata, Vilandavatsa, Vakula, Maha, Kautila, Nanda, Sundarananda, Puna Maitreya, Niputra, Subhati, Ananda, and Rahula, and other great arahats such as this, whom the assembly knew and recognized. Moreover, present were those who need further study and those beyond study, 2,000 in all. Bhikkhuni Maha Prajapati was there with her retinue of 6,000, and also Rahula's mother, Bhikkhuni Yosohara, with her retinue. There were 80,000 bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, all irreversibly established in Anuttara Samyat Sambohi. So this is a lot, 80,000 bodhisattva and mahasattva. All had attained dharani and the eloquence of delight in speech and turned the irreversible wheel of the Dhamma. They have made offerings to limitless hundreds of thousands of Buddhas. In the presence of those Buddhas, they have planted the roots of virtue. They were consistent or constantly receiving those Buddhas' praise. They cultivated themselves in compassion and were well able to enter the wisdom of the Buddha. They have penetrated the great wisdom and arrived at the other shore. Their reputation extended throughout limitless world realms. They were able to rescue countless hundreds of thousands of sentient beings. Their name were Bodhisattva Manjushri, the Bodhisattva who contemplates the world of sound, Kuan-sing, then the Bodhisattva of great strength, then the Bodhisattva forever vigorous, the Bodhisattva unresting, the Bodhisattva Jewel-pump, the Bodhisattva Medicine King, the Bodhisattva Courageous Giving, the Bodhisattva Jewel-moon, the Bodhisattva Moonlight, the Bodhisattva Full Moon, the Bodhisattva Great Power, the Bodhisattva Unlimited Power, the Bodhisattva Transcending the Three Realms, the Bodhisattva Bhadrapala, the Bodhisattva Maitreya, the Bodhisattva Accumulation of Jewels, the Bodhisattva Guiding Master, and other Bodhisattvas such as this, 80,000 in all. So that is the amount. At that time, Shakra Devanand Indra was present with his retinue of 20,000 gods. So this is King Sakha. Among them were the god of moon, the god universal fragrant, the god jewel light, and the four great heavenly kings, each with their retinues, 10,000 gods in all. There was a god cell mastery and the god of cells, great cell mastery, each with his retinue, 30,000 gods in all. There was the god Brahma, lord of the Saha world, the great Brahma Shikin, the great Brahma Brilliance, and others, each with their retinue, 20,000 gods in all. There were 8 dragon kings, Dragon King Nanda, Dragon King Upananda, Dragon King Sagara, Dragon King Vasuki, Dragon King Tashaka, Dragon King Anavatapa, Dragon King Manu Manaslin, and Dragon King Upalaka, and others, each with his retinue of several hundreds of thousands of followers. There were 4 Kinara King, the Kinara King Dhamma, the Kinara King Fine Dhamma, Kinara King Great Dhamma, and the Kinara King Upholder of Dhamma, each with his retinue of several hundreds of thousands of followers. There were 4 Gandhavas King, Gandhava King Music, Gandhava King Musical Sound, Gandhava King Beautiful, and Gandhara King Beautiful Sound, each with his following of several hundreds of thousands of disciples. There were 4 Asura Kings, the Asura King Balin, Asura King Karaskanda, Asura King Vimachitrin, and the Asura King Rahu, each with his retinue of several hundreds of thousands of followers. There were 4 Garuda King, Garuda King Great Majesty, Garuda King Great Body, Garuda King Great Fullness, and Garuda King as you were, each with his own retinue of several hundreds of thousands of followers. There was Vadahi's son, the King Ajatasattru, with his retinue of several hundreds of thousands of followers, each made observant obeisance at the Buddha's feet, withdraw to one side and sat down. So that is the sutta part. Yeah? Then now we will go to the commentaries. Yeah? Chapter 1, Introduction by Venerable Shenhua, the Sutra. Thus have I heard. General introduction to roots and branches division of the sutta. The wonderful Dhamma Lotus Sutta contains 28 chapters. This is the summary. Yeah? The first chapter, introduction, narrates the causes and conditions leading up to the speaking of the sutta. Although the first passage of text of all sutta is an introduction, this is the only sutta that devotes an entire chapter to an introduction. Thus have I heard, every Dhamma assembly must fulfill 6 requirements: faith, hearing, time, host, place, and audience. Thus fill the requirement of faith. I have heard fills the requirement of hearing. I explain the reason behind this 4 words in the commentary to the Vajra Sutta. Dhamma which is thus can be believed. Dhamma which is not thus cannot be believed. Who is the one I refer to here? There is the 4 self of common people, and there is the divine self of non-Buddhist religion. Here, the I refer to the 4 self, not the true self. You may ask, why does the text say I heard? Basically, isn't the ear which hears? Why does it say the ear hears? Why doesn't it say the ear hears? The ear is just one part of the body. The I refer to the entire form and mind or body. Therefore, Ananda said, I have heard, thus I have heard, thus have I heard. Ananda spoke the word thus have I heard for 4 reasons: to resolve the assembly's doubt, to honor the Buddha's instruction, to put an end to dispute, to distinguish Buddhist sutra from writing of other religion. Yeah? What doubt did the assembly hold? When Ananda compiled the sutta and took the Dhamma seat, he manifested the characteristics of the Buddha and thus caused the assembly suddenly to give rise to 3 doubts. First of all, bodhisattvas, arahats, and bhikkhus thought perhaps Sakyamuni Buddha haven't entered nirvana after all, but had returned again to lecture on the sutta. Others thought there must be the Buddha from another place who had come to teach us. Still other thought Ananda has become a Buddha. Otherwise, how could he manifest the 32 marks and the 8 minor characteristics of a Buddha? How could he, surrounded by this dazzling purple golden light, appear so splendid? But when Ananda took the Dhamma seat and said, thus have I heard, the 3 doubts were all resolve, the bodhisattva, the arahats, and bhikkhus then knew Ananda was saying what Ananda was saying. He said, this is the Dhamma. It is thus. Thus it was that I personally heard the Dhamma from the Buddha. It is not my own invention. The second reason the words, thus have I heard, were used was in order to honor the Buddha's instruction. When the Buddha was about to enter Parinibbana, he told Ananda, all the sutta should begin with the word, thus have I heard. And so when Ananda compiled the sutra, he followed the Buddha's instruction and used the 4 words at their beginning. So this is the reason why Ananda spoke with this 4 words, thus have I heard. So these are the Buddha's instruction to honor him. The 3rd reason was to put an end to dispute. Ananda was one of the youngest of the Buddha's disciples. He haven't make it clear that the sutta he was speaking were the Buddha's word and not his. There would certainly have been objection. You say you can speak sutta? Well, so can I, or so can we. People would have said. But when Ananda said that the sutta were not his own, but were that of the Buddha, all the assembly, including his elders, his peers, and his junior, had nothing to say. They were the Buddha's sutta. This silenced their objection and end all dispute. So this introduction part is to enable you to understand the reason behind all this. It's mainly for us to be familiar with how they actually documented all the suttas and how it was meant to be. Okay, I'll read on page 124. The fourth reason was to distinguish the Buddha's suttas from the writing of other religion. So you cannot find the first four words, thus have I heard, then definitely it's not from the Buddhist teaching. The texts of other religion begin their work with the word A or O, meaning non-existent or existent, respectively. They say that all the 10,000 Dhamma either exist nor do not exist, or do not exist. The phrase, thus have I heard, at the beginning of the Buddha Sutra, set them apart from the writing of other religion, which have a head but no tail, or a tail, no head, because they advocate either existent or non-existent. Ananda asked the Buddha about four matters before the Buddha entered Nibbana. The first concerned the compilation of sutta, and the Buddha replied that all suttas should begin with the word thus have I heard. The second question was where the Buddha's disciples should dwell, and the Buddha told them to dwell in the four foundations of mindfulness, or four applications of mindfulness. Mindfulness with regards to kaya, the body, feeling, thought processes, or content of consciousness, and dhamma. The four applications of mindfulness are kaya nupassana, or contemplate the body as impure. This is the Mahayana version. The actual kaya nupassana is different. But they develop this emphasis. You're supposed to contemplate the body as impure, contemplate feeling as suffering, contemplate thought or content of consciousness as impermanent, means sanghara anicchang, and contemplate dhamma or truth as non-self or without self. The first application of mindfulness is to contemplate the body as impure. Our body constantly perspire, no matter how well or how often we wash them. If we don't wash, they soon begin to stink. Impurity always oozes out from the nine holes or openings on the body. Tears and metal flow from the eyes. Wax accumulate in the ears. Mucus come from the nose. Phlegm and saliva come from the mouth. They are all unclean. No matter how much you wash it, wash on the outside, the inside is still filthy. We have discussed seven orifices so far. Add excretion and urine from the eliminatory orifice, and that makes nine. Therefore, you should contemplate the body as impure. So that is the Mahayana way. Living beings burdened with heavy greed should cultivate the contemplation of impurity and view how unclean the body is. Greed here refers to sexual desire or lust. Those afflicted with sexual desire should apply the contemplation to counteract lust. No matter how beautiful the woman or how attractive the man, they are still basically unclean, since they are impure. They are impure. How can you cling to them? Understanding the basic impurity, you won't keep longing for them, and your sexual desire will diminish. So this part of the contemplation is only one aspect of the actual Kayanupassana teaching within the sutta. Actually, within the Theravada Sutta, there are mainly six categories of Kayanupassana practices. The Buddha say, you must first train your sati or mindfulness using your kaya. So under the first foundation of mindfulness, you're supposed to develop the mindfulness of various parts within your kaya. So the first category of cultivation is the Buddha taught anapanasati. This anapanasati is to develop mindfulness of the breath, the in and out breath. That's why anapana is in and out breath. Then sati is mindful of the in and out breath. So when you train this way, maintain awareness of the in and out breath, means like the Buddha's instruction, breathing in, aware, breathing out, aware. You don't think. You develop awareness of the breath. That's why you are with the moment in full awareness, without thought. And that will develop the stability of mindfulness or awareness within. So you have to do it until it stabilizes. Then until the anapanasati become very, very quiet, very still, like no more movement. Then you just silence everything to develop the more refined awareness within. Then later on, if you are patient enough and you can develop the awareness of the subtle breathing, then even this subtle breathing will become prominent to you later on when your mindfulness has reached that level of refinement. Bono, constant cultivation of anapanasati, then the mind will be in sati, or we call the mind enter sati. Is whatever you want to be aware, you just allow this mind that has entered sati or in sati to be aware. Wherever you locate this mind, the awareness will be there. So that's how you develop the heedfulness, ever mindful. They use that heedfulness to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is mainly the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. So when you do this, the Buddha call it heedfulness, the constantly meditative and ever mindful. This is heedfulness. Then under Dhammapada verse 23 is it, the constantly meditative and ever mindful and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana. Definitely. That's why that is what heedfulness is all about. The moment you are heedful, like Dhammapada verse 21, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Means you realize the deathless element. Then heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. That's why you don't train your mind to be heedful. You are as if dead. You don't stand a chance spiritually. You don't stand a chance. Then after you have skillfully developed the ability to be mindful of the in and out breath, or develop the sati until your mind enters sati, then you can move on to daily mindfulness, starting with the four postures, like the Buddha mentioned under the second category of practice of kayanupassana. He said standing aware, walking aware, sitting aware, lying down aware. So these are the four postures. You anchor your mindfulness to the kaya first. Then when you can do that already, you are more stable already, then you can connect up all the connecting moments. That's why the third category of practice is to develop mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action or movement in the present moment. So in the Kayanupassana Sutta, it's described as standing aware, looking forward aware, bending, stretching, turning aware, putting on your clothing or monk's robe, shoulder clothing aware, whatever you do aware, blinking of your eye aware, turning of your hand when you walk aware. Then whatever that goes on, you develop awareness. Then even answering nature's call aware. So this is the third category of mindfulness of kaya training. If you do this, your daily mindfulness will stabilize and you will become very different. You will start to see a lot of things that you never see before. That's why Kaya Anupassana is very powerful. Only after you have done these three, then you start the fourth cultivation. You use that mindfulness, the stability of mindfulness that you have established, to develop mindfulness of the four elements of this body. Makes you aware that there are these four elements that makes up of this body. As I always say, this body goes the way of nature. Why? Because it is made up of elements which are from nature. That's the reason why under the five daily contemplation, the Buddha said, this body of ours is of the nature to decay or grow old, get sick, and finally die. For he has not gone beyond decay, always sickness and death. So understanding this is very important. Then you will not cling to this body because it's not you. It's without the consciousness. How can it be you? Element goes the way of nature. So we say the four elements are ways to simplify this physical body. Within the physical body, we have the element of earth or pathway, where there is hardness, solid form. We call it pathway, the earth element. And tejo, which is heat element. That's why we have bodily temperature, 98.4, and all the others. Heat within our body to maintain life. Then we have the apo. Apo is the water element, or what we call cohesion. Then finally is vayu, which is wind element. Because within our physical body, we have the chi, the wind element, our breath, our life force, our pulse of life, and everything that vibrates within this form of mind. That's how it maintains our posture. Without this wind element, we cannot stand straight. We cannot maintain our this whatever posture. Of course, we need the backbone and all those things. We need the supporting leg and other things. But the wind element is very important. Because without that, there is no life, no breathing. Your heart cannot beat, cannot pump. Then you cannot take in prana or oxygen from the environment. And you cannot excrete through the nostril too. So the wind element is very vital for life. So when you contemplate these four elements, you will come to know that these four elements goes the way of nature. It is on the way to decay. Means impermanent, depending on condition. That's why we go through life, the four phases. When we are born, we have the child, the youth. The child, very beautiful first phase of formation of the body with all the organ, everything. Then we grew into an embryo, then into a baby, then a child. Then we become a youth. Then we continue to grow until we reach adulthood. Then we plateau off. We will start to get old, get sick. And finally, the body goes the way of nature. It dies, separate from the consciousness. And you cannot do anything to it. The other life force is gone. There is nothing to sustain it or nourish it. The organ has failed. And there is no more condition to sustain life. Then you will come to know, basically, these four elements are impermanent, empty, not real, not what you think. They go the way of nature. Then if it's only element, no knowing, how can it be you? So this contemplation is very useful. It's tied to the first three of the 5 daily contemplation. Then after that, we have the fourth category of practice. The four element is the fourth. Then we have the fifth, the 32 parts of the body. You're supposed to visualize and recite the 32 parts. When these 32 parts come together, then it will have the causes and conditions to be animated with the life force, everything, to become a human being that has life. That's why the form and mind number root arise. Then you will start to know, like the bullock cart, what they call analogy that the Buddha gave. He told the monk, you look at the bullock cart. What do you see? They say bullock cart. Okay. So he said, take the parts away. The wheel, the axle, the carriage and all those things. Then lay them down. What do you see? The bullock cart is gone. No more bullock cart. Then the Buddha say, okay, assemble them back. Then he asked them, what do you see? Hey, bullock cart again. So what is your understanding? When the causes and conditions are there, then all these parts come together and allow it to become a concept that performs a function. Then you give it a name, you label it as something, a car or a block car. So arise already, exists already. If you deludedly cling and grasp, thinking that it's real, then you have been foolish. Because these are conditioned arising phenomena or entity. When all the condition is dispersed, when the part is no more, it doesn't perform the function. It loses its entity. Then you say, gone or die. So actually, these are delusions of the mundane mind, the human mind, that doesn't have the wisdom and the understanding. But if you have mindfulness, you can see them. They are made out of parts. Any of these parts is gone. Very difficult for you to survive. Nowadays, maybe with progress in modern science, you can actually do help you to do the transplant, transfusion, to replace whatever lacking or whatever that is not functioning. So this is what the 32 part teaching is all about. Then the other thing is to actually mindfully look at this 32 part. They are not what you think. Some of these 32 parts are very filthy, full of this, like the mucus, the excreta, the phlegm, and everything that is inside your body, your intestine, your sweat, your urine, your whatever discharge. So all this show to you that this body is impure. That's why Mahayana like to use this when they contemplate. So impurity of this body. So those with lustful character, or those who cannot understand the three universal characteristics, they will resort to this type of contemplation. Like Master Shenhua, he liked to use this word. Our physical body is like a filthy skin bag of filth wrapped inside. they are not what you think. So when you constantly contemplate, then you don't see the beauty of the form. You no longer develop the craving, the attachment to this youthful form when you are young, when you are healthy, just like the flower. When it starts to bloom, the fragrance, the blooming of the flower is so beautiful. But finally, when causes and condition is gone, and it fails to, what they call flower, the evil decay, evil degenerate. Then you see the whole flower wither and become very filthy. So the process of impermanence with mindfulness, you start to observe and see a lot of things has this characteristic. We call it doesn't last, ephemeral. That is the English word. And apart from that, the Buddha taught the six category of cultivation of kaya anupassana. Now this sixth one is the nine stages of cemetery decomposition of the physical body when a being dies. When a human being die or an animal die. So what is death? If you are mindful, if you are aware, you will know. It's just a consciousness that separate from the physical body. Then the two get separated. They say, you die. Then without the consciousness, it cannot pump the heart. There is no life force. You cannot become conscious. You cannot animate into a human being. You cannot create thought process. You cannot arise the feeling, aggregate, and all those things. That's why you need the consciousness, the life force, and the physical body, all in appropriate working condition. So these three, when it comes together, then it animates the human being or living being, like it is alive. That's the reason why our form and mind is dependent, originating, condition arising, it come together because of these three conditions. And when these three conditions disperse, then the being is gone. So the nine stages of cemetery decomposition is to let you understand when this physical body is devoid of consciousness, it goes the way of nature, the elements disperse. Then finally, when the element disperse, what happened to you? This body go the way of nature. That's why finally, from dust to dust, you return to dust. Why? Upon that, the wind element is gone. Then followed by heat element. There is no life force. There is no heartbeat, no wind element. Then there is also no more heat because that body will become cold very fast. So when the heat element and the wind element no more, the earth element will actually deteriorate because there is no more heat inside there. Of course, sometimes it becomes cold and harder than all things. But the water element will start to ooze out. Then even your stool, you cannot hold, your urine, you cannot hold, the muscle are gone. That's why you see the decay process. Then that physical solid body start to decay. Then over time, it gets like eaten by these birds or whatever that come and feed on it. Then it get the flesh all gone. Left with the bone. Then the bone also over time will decay. That's why finally it becomes dust blown away. So this is for you to see the unreality of form. Form is not real, not what you think. Form is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal, or make out the four elements. So when the four element is gone, is finally the water element, the earth element also gone. Then without the four elements, who are you? The human being is no more. So that's how you contemplate. Then you develop the understanding not to be deluded by this physical body. This is to allow people to develop wisdom. But for the Mahayana, I don't know why, they just focus on one aspect, contemplate the kaya or physical body as impure. So we have covered the kaya anupassana, so we move on. The second is to contemplate feeling as suffering. Everything you experience, be it pleasant or unpleasant, moves your mind. When your mind moves, that is suffering. Means how your mind stir and react to sense experience. There are many kinds of suffering. There are the three sufferings, followed by the eight sufferings. So this one is the categorizing of this type of suffering. And all the limitless suffering. So the three suffering are, these are all also taught in the Theravada text. The suffering within suffering, then the suffering due to decay, then the suffering of process. Then the eight suffering are the first noble truth realities. The suffering of birth, old age, sickness and death. The first form. Then number five is the suffering of being separated from your prized possession and your loved ones. Here they only put your loved ones. But everything that you cling on to, hold on to, grasp on to, there is the possibility of separation. When your form and mind separate, you cannot own anything. Your entity erased. Like the movie Eraser, when your entity is erased, you cease to exist. Then how can you own anything? So either these things separate from you before you die, when conditions cease to be, or when you die, when your entity is erased, then you cannot own anything. So they will also separate from you. So separation is a reality. So this is the fifth suffering. Then the sixth condition is the suffering of being around one people whom you don't like. Here this we use the word what one hates. Actually, both also can be used. People whom you don't like means you sometimes don't like that person. Means you tend to have the tendency to hate that person, especially your mother-in-law or whatever that you cannot come to relationship with. Then to all those who bully you or stress you out, put fear in you, harass you, especially in the career field. Then number seven is suffering of not getting what one desire or want. When you cannot get what you want, you suffer. Then you can also include two more things. When things don't go your way, it's the same. Means you cannot get what you desire or crave for. So all these are the understanding. The other one is when your expectation in life is not met. You expect to be promoted, but you didn't. That can cause you suffering. And you expect your good friend, your sister, your brothers to understand you, but it didn't happen. So this can cause suffering because your mind perceives it so. Then number eight is the final summary of the first noble truth, eight reality. The Buddha said, the suffering of the raging blaze of the fire aggregate means these upadana khandas, the grasping aggregates, are suffering. When you deludedly, through self-delusions, clarity, grasp onto the fire aggregate of form and mind, your physical body, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vinyana, suffering will result. Then we go into the description of the three suffering. The three sufferings are present within the three rhyme. The desire rhyme, the form rhyme, and the formless rhyme. Means karma loka, rupa loka, and the formless rhyme is arupa loka. Loka is rhyme of existence. No matter what you feel, it is bound up with suffering. If you can understand this, you won't crave pleasure, and you will be able to avoid suffering. So here there is not much explanation on what we call mindfulness of feeling. But the actual understanding of mindfulness of feeling is very deep, is different from what people think. So here, under the Mahayana Sutta, they only take one part, contemplation on feeling as suffering. But under the Theravada teaching, the Buddha say, feeling, when it arises, it can actually move. And it can create the three types of feeling. So when feeling arises, initially it's pure feeling. Then how did our mind develop the perception that it is a pleasant feeling? If it's pleasant feeling, we attach, we cling, we crave for it to be repeated. You want it more. That if it's unpleasant, we try to resist it, reject it, and push it away. Then there is a third type of feeling, which is neutral feeling, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. This happens within the human mind. The three loka, kama loka, rupa loka, and arupa loka. So mindfulness of feeling is to be mindful that feeling, whether it's still pure feeling or not, whether you have wrong view, delusion, craving, desire, or aversion, the evils or delusion, then how it actually creates stirring of your mind to react to those feelings negatively or positively. So positive craving is pleasant feeling, negative craving is unpleasant feeling. And there is a neutral feeling where you neither feel pleasant or unpleasant. And most of the time it has nothing to do with you. That's why you don't feel anything. You say, no, I don't feel anything. Yeah. And sometimes, especially when the weather is neither too cold or too hot, you feel good, isn't it? So there is this pleasant feeling. Yeah. And when it's too hot, it's unpleasant feeling. Too cold, also unpleasant feeling. Then when it's neither hot or cold, it's just nice. You have a very nice feeling leading to a very neutral feeling because you don't complain. Mm. And sometimes you see somebody's car get into accident or trouble or what. If it's not your car, you don't feel anything. You can sometimes joke about it or laugh. But if it's your car or related to you, the person's car, then you feel it. Understand? Then that feeling actually create the movement. That's why the Buddha said, when you develop sensitivity of mindfulness of feeling, you must be aware. When feeling arise, upon contact, feeling arise, you must be aware. Then when feeling has become unpleasant feeling, you must also be aware. Or feeling has become pleasant feeling, when there is craving and desire for it, you must be aware. Aware means what? When you are aware, means you develop the understanding that your mood has arise. Your pure feeling has changed and become pleasant and unpleasant. Sometimes it's neutral. So pleasant feeling denote one. Denote that there is sensual desire, craving, to have it, to get it repeated, or develop craving or desire for it. And you feel like wanting more. So when this arises, the Buddha says, you must be aware. Means this is sensual desire, craving, positive craving. And there is a mental hindrance. That's why it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. That's why you cannot develop the understanding. So mindfulness of kaya leading to the stability of mindfulness, to see the mindfulness of feeling, is very important. When there is stability, you can actually stay at the moment of feeling. And when you have wisdom, yoniso manasikara, your mind will not stir. So feeling will remain as pure feeling. Then whatever that arise, the awareness is there. Then when they arise to distract you or to make you heedless, you are aware. Mindfulness of feeling will tell you, feeling has changed to pleasant feeling, or pleasant sensation, or unpleasant, or neutral. So the mental states or emotion that arise to the pleasant feeling is identical to sensual desire, which is a mental hindrance. Then when you develop negativity of feeling, aversion, dislike, envy, jealousy, unpleasant feeling, that itself is the opposite side of ill will. The opposite side of sensual desire, which is ill will. And sensual desire and ill will are the first two mental hindrances. When they arise, you develop mental hindrance. And what are mental hindrances? Mind state that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state or inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you cannot be peaceful. You cannot develop the meditative mind. So throughout the day, when you live your life, you are heedless. You keep on oscillating between light and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant feeling. What will happen? Means it becomes a habitual tendency. You habitually create the sensual desire and ill will, which are the hindrance of mind that develop the heedlessness. That's why your mind cannot settle down, cannot be peaceful, where the hindrances are there. So how can you meditate? This is the understanding. So if you want to develop the meditation, you must have spiritual faculty, which is the opposite of the five mental hindrances. So apart from sensual desire and ill will, there is also the sleepiness or sloth and torpor. Then there is this, what they call restlessness of mind, followed by doubt, the five mental hindrances. And to reverse this, you need to cultivate the opposite five, starting with faith, sadha, then develop virya, spiritual zeal or tenacity. Then after that, sati, mindfulness. The moment you are aware, mindful, there is no thought, no thinking, no duality. That's why you are at peace. There is a silent mind, the awareness within. Then you stabilize it, it becomes samadhi. With sati and samadhi, you can see what is happening. That's why it can give rise to wisdom. Then with these five spiritual faculty, it will counter all of the five mental hindrances. That's how you meditate. That's how you develop understanding. So this is very important. So from Vedana, no Pasana, you will move to the third foundation of mindfulness, which is Chitta no Pasana, mindfulness of content of consciousness. From there, you start to see your Sankara activity. When content of consciousness has the evils of greed, you must be aware. When content of consciousness has the evils of hatred, envy, jealousy, you must be aware. When the content of consciousness has this delusion or doubt, fear, anxiety, you must be aware. This is to make you aware that your mind has the evils. When it has the evil, it makes you evil. You cannot keep your precepts. You cannot cultivate. That's why mindfulness is very, very important. Then finally, of course, the last foundation is to apply mindfulness to the teaching, to the Dhamma, to all the truth that he has taught you. The five category of cultivation is Dhammanupassana. Under that, there are five category of practice. First, mindfulness of five mental hindrances. This one is most important. When the mental hindrance is there, you cannot meditate. You cannot be peaceful. That's why you must be mindful of it. Then you know how to overcome it. Yeah. Then you will know how to go through the three phases. When you are mindful and aware, you will come to know how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. Then you continue to be aware and let things be, then how it is. Then you will come to understand how the arisen mental hindrance is to be. Then when you have developed the wisdom of how it arises and how it sees and straighten your view, then you will know how, why in the future this mental hindrance can never arise again. That is the mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. Then after that is mindfulness of the five aggregates of form and mind. Then followed by mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. Then finally, the fourth category is mindfulness of the seven factors of enlightenment. Well, by the time you finish the third category of cultivation of mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and the six external sense bases, you will have traced the origination factor for the defilement. Then you will know how to retrospectively reverse it so that you can straighten your view to actually liberate your mind from being entangled. And that's how you develop wisdom. Then when you develop wisdom and understanding, the seven factors of enlightenment keep on arising. That's how you develop mindfulness of them. Then when you know they keep on arising, means you are on the right path. Then during that time, the last category, mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths and its three turning become very easy, very straightforward, following the Abhijja Sutta. That's why step 8 is the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness. Yeah. Then after that is the step 9, which is the development of the seven factors of enlightenment, the mindfulness of it. Then after that, enlightenment, step 10, awakening. Okay, so that covers what we need to understand. Maybe I will quickly read through these two more paragraphs. So the third application of mindfulness is to contemplate thought. Actually, it's content or consciousness as impermanent. So they only focus on this. But the Theravada teaching is deeper. It's supposed to see the content of consciousness. In our mind, when one thought is produced, the former thought is extinguished. When yet another thought arises, the preceding thought perish. Thoughts succeed one another like waves in the sea. Thought after thought arise without cease. But they are all impermanent. Every thought is vain and unreal. Therefore, we must contemplate the thought as impermanent. But you don't have to use this type of knowledge to actually develop it. When you are mindful of the content of consciousness, you will know sankhara or content of consciousness. They keep on arising and passing away. You can see them. And this universal characteristic, you can insight into them. Then when you attach and cling, suffering is the result. So not only impermanent, you can also see dukkha, suffering. That you want things your way, which is not nature's way, you really suffer. Then finally, because it's impermanent, there is no permanent and changing entity within, then how can you say this is me, this is I? Because even this physical body, these aggregates of mind, they come and they go, they come and they go. And when they are gone, you didn't die. So how can it be you? That's why it's non-self, empty. not what you think. Okay? Then the last paragraph is the fourth application of mindfulness is to contemplate Dhamma as non-self. What are Dhammas? Generally, they are divided into five categories. They are explained in detail in the Kshatriya, on the door to understanding the 100 Dhammas by Bodhisattva Vasubandhu. So here they say five category. I think it must be referring to the five category of practices taught under Theravada Sutta, mindfulness of Dhamma. Okay, so at least we finish here. And we stop here. There are 11 form Dhammas. Now we will go and develop the second session, which is meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you may have.
Just that, maybe just after I get married, I got a lot of lifestyle changes. So I click.
Okay.
Like, you know, trying to adjust.
Yeah, cope with the new life. Yeah, it's like a new life after marriage. You are no longer alone.
Because when I was with my parents,
family.
They are a bit like how to say strict in a way. My husband, he is very liberal, you know.
Very good.
Yeah, and then he also very good, like he cook. He knows how to cook.
Sadhu. You are a very lucky wife. Normally wife cook, this is husband cook, Sadhu.
And then he helped me do a lot of things. So I feel hard to say, it's like suddenly I couldn't adjust, you know. I don't know how.
I teach you how to develop right talk, because when you reflect what he has done, you should express your gratitude towards him, because as a husband, normally they don't cook for a wife, but to have such a husband is quite blessed, because maybe they like cooking, I don't know, or maybe he loves you so much that he's willing to cook for you. That's why he is liberal towards you. And many of these, you have the understanding, you will appreciate. Then the appreciative mind will give rise to the right speech and right thought. Then you can also express your gratitude. Thank him. Thank you so much. You're really very, very loving and understanding. And you can really cook. Of course, if the cooking is good, you can express it. Then he will feel joy. This is what relationship is all about, harmony. Don't take things for granted. That is the message. There are a lot of couples, they take things for granted. After a while, they lose very loving type of relationship. Because when you are courting, everything not confirmed yet. So you tend to like act out of it. Then you cannot you may not want the future spouse to know your shortfall and all those things. But as you become husband and wife, you will start to see more reality. That's why there is one author, Alexander Pope. I remember my literature teacher always shared this joke. He said the famous sentence, reality begins after the first day of marriage. So that one, I think, is quite true for people who don't appreciate the life and their spouse. So if you take things for granted, then you end up the relationship become negative. But if you like what you are going through is very beautiful. So if you can maintain that type of understanding, then like initially you feel very confused because you came from an environment where your parents are very strict to you. So this is mindfulness and awareness of how your mind has changed because on a different setting, different environment than living with your husband, your in-law. Are your in-laws with you?
No.
Then not so bad. Less likely condition for misunderstanding and friction. It doesn't mean that it will happen, no. Less likelihood, because most people after a while, they develop some form of misunderstanding when they have other people coming in. But for you, I think you're blessed. Salute to you. This, the understanding part is very important, very vital. And this will give you the understanding of how to apply the Noble Eightfold Path, the Dhamma, to develop understanding of relationship and life. And you continue to observe and see how over time this thing continue to flower and flourish based on understanding and respect. And all this you will know. But the best test is when you are confronted with a situation with a maybe pending situation. It can be traumatic or non-traumatic. It's okay. But that is what relationship is all about. That's what life is all about. Like those people who are affected by the pandemic. Some are very traumatic. Then those affected by the flood too. Very severe. So all these are the first noble truth reality that we can mindfully observe, see, understand, and develop sensitivity to actually turn all this understanding around and put them into good use so that we can be a blessing to all, so that all relationship can be beautiful and meaningful. So that is what the mind is all about. Okay? Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, actually, I also got one question.
Because
when we are in a situation where it's, you know, like not so favorable, then
that is the test.
We just have this how to say viriya to, you know, to practice. But for example, like when you go to, like for example, you go to a place that's more favorable, then the viriya will be like, you know, like lacking.
Okay.
So, and I really feel that lately, very tired. And then I don't know.
So what is your question? More important, that is how you feel, okay.
So it's more favorable condition. Not if favorable. It's like, how to say? It's
you
like
cannot develop the viriya, correct? So what is your particular question? You want to know why or any other question that is tied to that thing?
It's like what I say, I change my husband is very liberal. Of course he's not a practitioner, so of course he knows what he needs to do, like very responsible and everything. So he has his because he's 11 years older than me, so responsible and all this he knows, but
he's more mature.
But he's not a practitioner, so he don't practice, he don't meditate and everything. So this is what lacking a bit, so I wanted to, you know, like go back to my previous meditation way, but I feel a bit
now I understand how you feel. It's okay, no problem, because this is quite common In fact, a lot of married couple, they have various type of situation or condition. For yours, is really unique because he is totally not non-practitioner. But does he has any belief system or religion?
Yeah, he told me that he had affinity with Guan Yin, so he has a Guan Yin at home.
Oh, okay. That's good. Miss being a traditional Chinese who pay respect to Guan Yin and all those things. Okay, I think it will develop. Yes, what is more important is, tell me, like I used to tell a lot of parameters. Because initially when they learn the Dhamma from me, they feel that this is so beautiful, so useful, so applicable, and so wonderful, and they want to share it with their husband. So many of them in the early years, I remember, they asked me, Prajati, how? And some make affirmation, determination. I want to make sure my husband benefit, and they can also come. But not necessary. As long as you show your ability to apply this Dhamma understanding and become a much, I should say, better person that has understanding and no negativity or mood and all those things to cause misunderstanding, argument, suffering, only, then they will see that you are different. You are different because of the Dhamma. Then through all this, they actually not what you think, like stupid or don't, they don't understand what you are doing. Like last time, there is one guy who told me, he tried to get husband come, but the husband didn't really want to come. But the husband is, I think, very successful, educated, and with a own understanding. Then suddenly one day, he has a condition. He requested the husband to send her to Thursday class, Sui An's house. Then after that, he said, you can go if you want to. Then after that, you come back and fetch me. Oh, the husband very good. Like your husband very understanding. Then I wait for you. How did you say 2 hours or no? Then 2 hours. Then the husband also maybe know where to go or don't know what to decide. Then suddenly the wife say, why not you join me for one session? Oh, that's how it started. Oh, after that, the husband keep on coming there. When he listened, he know it's different. Oh, and he can also observe that his wife changed. Oh, and he actually invited me and my wife for dinner and thanked me personally for the thing that I have done to share the Dhamma, the thing, and make the wine different. Then he finally understood. He also joined in the Kayamita. That's how he come in. But some, not necessary. Like there is one Kayamita, initially also doesn't believe in practice, only they follow the Taoist and the Chinese tradition on the feng shui, all those things. And finally, when you make aspiration and all those things, then you try to like develop good relationship, right? Then they start to understand. Then slowly, slowly, the husband start to attend. Then later on, surprisingly, I think the husband was very strong affinity Kuan Yin also. Then there is affinity when I went to Klang to give talk. Then he volunteered, the husband volunteered to fetch me almost most of the Friday talk in Klang during that time. So when he fetched me and when he reached there, he feel very good. He can meditate, he can feel my energy and all those things. Then he find the Dhamma useful, inspiring, change his life. That's how he come into contact with the thing. But he do his thing. The wife do her thing. So no problem. Then there are other cases too. Initially, like you want to learn Dhamma or whatever, they won't stop you. There are some Kayamita like that, like your husband, very liberal. And they can. But there are some, the husband don't understand, they fear, they actually put us off. But somehow he can resolve. We are through Dhamma. You can resolve all this. So for your case, it's a lot more easy, simple. It doesn't mean that you alone, you cannot cultivate, you cannot practice. It's just like when you move Dhamma into daily life, now your life is different. You are, like you say, you are married. You are living with your husband in a different environment, experiencing life differently. You experience the good, the wholesomeness. Then you recall the day when you are not married, where you can full-time devote yourself to Dhamma, which is quite common. Then the mind will start to think, well, now you have a relationship, you have your duty as a wife, upkeep the house and all those things. Then it is a different life experience. You are exposed to different aspects of life. That's why you must apply the Dhamma. Then everything will be the way it's supposed to be. Then the relationship will be there, understanding will be there. Then both will become beautiful. Then he do his way, you do your way. As long as he don't stop you, there is no misunderstanding and conflict, which is very good. Then after that, through your ability to express yourself and live the Dhamma way, all this virtue, wisdom and understanding will shine forth. And because of the relationship you are together most of the time, they will know you are so different from normal, ordinary beings. Then they start to develop curiosity about what is this teaching that you are learning. Yeah. And when there is condition on it, you let him know or ask him to go to the website or whatever he want to ask, let him ask you first. I remember initially they asked a lot of questions. Those who came to me also before, they really believe in the Dhamma, have faith in the Dhamma, they have a lot of doubt because they were exposed to different type of life. Then because they get themselves entangled in life, especially the first noble two, reality hit them. Then they become so afflicted, miserable, that's why they say no. Then when they start to understand after many rounds of questioning, they start to change. Then they start to give it a chance to go into the cultivation. Then they listen. Then they try to apply. Then those who have faith, they actually transform and change. So be patient. You no need to force anybody to learn the Dhamma. Like I told my wife, our children, they have their life. Why want to force them? No need. When the condition come, things will happen. Before that, let things be. Because my wife was concerned. After they went to secondary school, they like totally forgot about the Sunday class in Brickfield. Because after secondary school, they have the activity already. They have their khaki, their friends and all that. Then most of the time, most parents will know. Later you have children, you also know. They reach certain age, like from one, from two, from three. They don't want to go out with you already. They say, Daddy, Daddy, you all go lah. I join my friend. So there are phases of adolescent or childhood development that will make them different. Then you have to understand that is life. But if you have the Dhamma, you will not force yourself to create like unnecessary karmic repercussion by forcing your relationship on others. Without them knowing it, actually is coming. This is not what the kid wants. So I always tell my wife, they are lying, let them decide. But when they are young, we need to guide them, we guide them. Then when we see that they have problem or situation, we tell them, we are always here for you. And you can always come to us and discuss things. At the end of the day, I just explain to you my understanding. Then your life, you still make the decision yourself. So don't worry. And then there is no like generation gap where people find it so difficult for their kids to communicate with them, to talk to them. So, when you are very understanding and open on all this, your children feel at home and they actually trust you. That they know you will not raise your voice and scold them and force them not to do the thing that they want to do. So all this is what is very common outside for most people. Well, they thought this is good for my children. They discipline them, they control them, and they say that is bad for you. But bad according to you, not to them. To them, maybe that is what they want. So there must be understanding. Then when they cross the line, you have to advise them. There is your duty as parent and all those things. So these are the Sigalawada Sutta type of teaching where relationship among the fellow human beings or sentient beings, they are all taught there. We only need to understand we have our duty. We play our role in the form of duty. So duty now, after you are married as a wife, as a spouse, then later on maybe as an in-law, daughter-in-law to your in-laws, then as daughter to your parents, then you have your siblings. Then you have your colleague, your office colleague, then neighbors and all those things. Then whatever relationship, you must develop the understanding of the Dhamma to live by the Dhamma, following Noble Eightfold Path. Then you will be beautiful. Understand, Tammy? So there is a lot of possibility. You don't have to worry. So you have that doubt, no need to worry. Because like you say, the virya are not there. But if you have the understanding, cultivation is our own, understand? Our environment and situation may distract us, yeah? Because it's a new way of life. You have to learn to adjust. But like I say, it is not a hindrance. Like when I was working as an engineer, actually that time my career was at my more or less peak. I was 34, 35 years old in 1988, 89. I did my cultivation full time, 86, 87, 88, 89. So these 3 years, I actually integrate the Dhamma cultivation, daily mindfulness, the daily religious routine into my career life. And I find it so interesting. That's why it can be done. So for you, Tammy, no problem.
Thank you.
Yeah, Sadhu. Anything else? No. Yeah, so you can nominate somebody, still got 10 minutes.
It's clear. It's like clear some of my inner doubt.
Ah, good. No, that will help you. Yeah, this sharing is very unique because we seldom discuss this topic. Okay, you set the condition for it. Because normally, Kayamita, when they come to spouse problem, or what, they will talk to me on one-to-one basis and they not bring it out. But for you, it's very good. Yeah, your relationship is very good and you are very open, which is actually difficult to come by. You must thank your good karma together with your husband's karma. That's how you all can come together. How long already? 1 year already?
March 1 year.
much earlier. Oh, hey, good enough. Already 10 months. Consider good outcome of the test. Yeah, everyone different, my daughter. So, salute to you. We wish you all the best, and maybe with the Dhamma, it will definitely help you to develop more understanding. Like you say, it has cleared your doubt. Now you know how to develop the faith, the virya. Then on your own, you can cultivate. Because Dhamma cultivation is about our own faith, our own understanding. Then don't worry whether your husband join you or what. Let things be. When condition is ready, things will unfold, it will happen. Before that, just let things be. Maintain the good understanding, the good relationship. Then develop the understanding to express yourself beautifully. Means through gratitude, through appreciative of what he has done for you and how he has made your life much better. Because he's very liberal. So compared to when you are living with your parents, you find that this is good. The only thing is you recall the day when you are with your parents, you got more time for cultivation. That's the only difference. So all these are very interesting Dhamma understanding that you can develop. That's why life itself is your greatest teacher. You learn from life.
Maybe I just share some experiences, some interesting experiences.
Oh, good, good. That will be
my
interesting.
My daughter's wedding recently.
Oh, sadhu, sadhu.
Actually, my daughter has been preparing
oh,
for the
okay.
wedding since last year.
Oh, okay, okay.
But due to MCO.
Yeah, they cannot have their function, huh?
Due to the MCO, they have to delay.
Yeah, yeah.
Until everything is more stable.
Yeah, yeah, correct, yes.
So from the day that they planned the wedding until recently. So I always emphasize that the boy's side parents has to come forward.
And propose.
Normally to propose to us.
Yeah,
that is the tradition, I suppose.
Yeah.
But they apparently they are not so keen, and then they just ignore this point, you know.
Oh, okay. Then what happened?
So anyway, they are still go ahead with their preparation.
Yeah.
They do whatever is necessary.
Yeah.
And they also just had their photo shooting.
Oh, okay. Registration of marriage all done, eh?
Not yet. The
oh,
registration.
Not OM much yet. Oh, okay.
ROM, they already got a date.
Good. Means soon already.
So, and they had their photo shooting as well.
Yeah.
So because of the pandemic, that's why we also agreed that the wedding has to be the simple one. So.
Yeah. Simplify. A lot of people do simplify.
Simplify. There's no wedding car or ceremony.
Yeah, nothing.
So, and actually we don't have any intention to hold any dinner also. But my daughter and her fiancé, so they have the intention to invite few close friends.
Yes, that is what usually they do. Even Alicia also do that.
So after that, we come. I mean, second thought. I told my daughter, since we are not giving any dinner.
Yeah.
They have the intention to get some close friends and also both side parents. So my concern is, I told my daughter, if we are not giving any dinner, so whether it's appropriate that we attend the dinner, you know,
So, oh, okay.
Because you also don't want to create any confusion, you know, among our siblings.
Yeah. But so it's arranged by the boy's side, the boy's family.
No. The couple is arranging for that.
Oh, okay. For the two family to meet and have dinner.
No, I mean they actually plan to have a wedding dinner for the
close friend official wedding dinner. Yeah, smaller group.
With a few friends.
So
my concern after that, I just told my daughter whether it's appropriate that we attend, you know. So I mean, since we have no intention to give any dinner, so we do not want to create any misunderstanding,
I think this thing is very simple, can be resolved very easily. Just make known your concern and intention, and they will come back with a favorable reply. Yes, what they want is you to join them in their ceremony. It's like the boy side or the bridegroom side, the family is having this wedding ceremony. Then the lady side, it depends if you also want, you can have a separate one, or sometimes they combine. Then for your case, you decide not to, that is okay. You don't have to. It's okay, because this one is when both sides is simple or not rigid, then I think a lot of things can be resolved.
So my concern is only this one. When the boy side learn about
your concern.
Learn about this news, you know.
Yeah.
So they immediately fix a date with us to meet up with us
to talk
about this this issue lah.
Yeah.
When we met.
Ah. Okay.
So in the dinner.
Ah.
So the father expressed, the boy's father expressed how important of our presence like wedding dinner, you know.
Yes.
And that is to give support and blessing to the couple. Agreed also, you know. And we told them that
normal way of expressing the joy and the thanks.
So good. I only express our concern to him. And then
they will understand or no problem.
And then also we say we will compromise and we and we also think what we should do lah, you know. After that, after talking about this, then I also express my will since from day one until now, they have not come forward to propose
make
to them.
No? The official proposal. Yeah.
So so I take the opportunity to talk to him.
Yes.
About express my view on the Chinese tradition on
Yes.
So I told him that we also want to be a simple one. But the basic tradition we cannot forget, I think.
Correct. Because for most families it's like that. Because it's like you allow your daughter to be married to them, to their side. So at least there is a courtesy for them to come over to officially propose.
So I just take that opportunity.
Very
so good. After that, so I did mention to him in order to avoid all the unnecessary Chinese tradition, you know. But the basic culture we have to follow,
respect the in-law and at least come over to officially request for the marriage of the daughter. I think that is very basic. This is good. So finally,
No, we met up. We met up in the dinner. I mentioned no. that to them.
Yeah, they won't know what to do. One. I think.
then.
No, then.
Okay. Then. Then I mentioned about the dowry lah. So I say. So dowry actually. Is a Chinese wedding.
Yeah.
Tradition, you know.
Yes.
For a few thousand years.
Yes.
It's also a practice in which the groom's family offer the bride family
correct.
An amount of money or normally a list of things which we do not
yeah,
want.
Yeah. It's for the daughter. You will actually everything go back to the daughter and sometimes you give more back. Yeah, it's for them.
Yeah, correct.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So we just I mean, I just mentioned about the dowry.
Dowry
is just simply means to signify the appreciation.
Yes.
Or gratitude, you know.
Whatever
you call it, like dowry. So after he heard that, you know, so he was like very unhappy, you know.
Oh.
So he asked me how much I want.
Oh yeah.
Then I say,
I think there is a misunderstanding already.
I say it's up to you.
Yeah.
I'm not demanding. I say.
Yeah.
So then he say, are you selling your daughter?
So direct, talking to father-in-law, mother-in-law.
Yeah. So after that, I say, no, don't get me wrong. So it's just a basic tradition, no matter. I mean, this is for a few thousand years. So
yeah.
You then he asked me twice, you know. So, which means he really don't like, you know. He's not so happy, you know.
So I
again, I explained to him the whole conversation after the talking about the dowry, the whole conversation like stir up lah, you know. After that I was being accused twist and turn not sincere manipulative lah, you know, things like that, you know. So I mean really cause a stir lah, but I was still remain very calm lah. So no matter what I say a lot of things are then
Interpreted wrongly, interpreted negatively.
It's normal. So then I feel that I mean it's no point for me to talk further, you know, because see there's no end to it.
He really
didn't accept the idea, you know. So after that, at the end I just say nope. So I told him, I said, no point talking further lah. So then when he listened that, he really very unhappy. So immediately he said, call off the wedding, you know.
So sensitive.
Very sensitive.
Emotion wise. Then so what happened?
He called off the wedding. Then actually before that, Chai already signaled me to stop, you know.
I cannot
stop, but this is the basic tradition. Since they don't come forward, I have to let them know, you know. Whether they want to do it is up to them, but let them
voice
know.
Make known to them.
Because I don't demand anything. I just say up to you, up to them.
Mm-hmm.
After he said that. Then I immediately just stand up, you know. Because no point talking already.
Yeah.
And then he raised his voice also, you know.
Okay.
He raised his voice louder and louder, and then I looked around. I'm afraid that he lost his control.
He'll
be more embarrassed after that. So then I was hesitating. So I look at them. I look at them, everybody's so angry, you know. so what am I going to do? I was hesitating, you know. Standing, I stood up already. After that, I look at them and I saw their angry faces. So after that, no, then I just left.
Oh, okay.
So I left. I know it's not I mean it's a bit rude, you know, but under that circumstances I have no choice.
Okay.
But I was not really stirred up, but I just walk off like that, you know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened.
Sorry?
That's what happened. Huh?
That's what happened. That's not the end yet.
Okay.
So I went back, after that I went back, you know, that night I recall. Actually the whole situation, they are not willing to give the dowry.
Okay.
So and then the next day, actually we remain very calm, you know. The next day immediately I do repentance. I ask for forgiveness, you know.
Yeah.
From them. I ask for forgiveness from them. After that, the following weekend, my daughter came back. Actually, my daughter was asked to move back by his mother.
Oh, okay.
For temporary lah, according to her. So I didn't know that also.
Okay.
So actually, it's not a bad thing, because after my daughter came back, actually it's giving her a chance to share and disclose more things to us, you know. Because normally my daughter, actually she's caught in between.
Yeah.
So a lot of things she just kept to herself.
Yeah, this will be a condition to express herself through an understanding. Because when you go through a situation, you see the true color of the other, I should say, the other side, the other side.
So then my daughter also, the auntie, the uncle, the cousins from Australia all called her. And then she shared with them more and more. And then the more she disclosed and then the more she shared, then we felt that that is really not
compatible, not suitable.
Yeah, actually, I mean, no point continue with the relationship, you know.
You continue, you will drag and become worse. So it turned out to be maybe in this guy, if that is the situation and the condition. It's small thing like that, also they cannot develop understanding, then it's very difficult to have a good relationship in the future.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So actually after this incident happened, we also never stop our daughter not to marry the son.
Yeah.
We also leave it to our daughter
to make
a decision.
Yes.
At the end, my daughter is the one that wanted to end the relationship.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a blessing in disguise. So I mean, this whole situation actually, I mean, from the time that they want to get married until recently, this thing happened just before New Year, around Christmas time. So I mean, we didn't actually really interfere whatever they do, you know. But because of their unreasonably interference from the parents-in-law, I mean. So
these are quite common, I think, the misunderstanding. Sometimes because of small thing I was told, something very major happened.
So I mean the whole situation, the condition, leading from one to another, you know.
Yeah.
So at the end,
man to man, like you say.
Yeah. So at the end, this wedding is being called off.
Good.
And the relationship has to be ended.
Yeah. Let your daughter make the decision and let them go through their ability to calm themselves down and develop deeper understanding of what marriage and relationship is all about. It's about that moment when you want to get married. When something happens, like Totemi, when there is a situation, there is a test. You cannot maintain your cool, your emotion, your patience, a small thing like that from the in-law also cannot develop understanding. It's very difficult, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But just let things be. Where there is condition, just let it be. Then see how things unfold. Then let your daughter decide with her life. So you have your duty as mother and I also as a father. Your duty is to advise and protect her in whatever manner that you deem proper. Yes. So that things will be in accordance. Otherwise, like they say, you don't handle it properly. Yeah, the Buddha did mention under Sigalova Sutta, our duty towards our children is to arrange for their marriage and make sure everything is properly arranged, so that they have the good marriage life. But there is a lot of give and take that is required. But if the situation turn out to be what it is, means you can see their true color and their behavior, then your daughter can come to a decision very fast.
Actually, it's a blessing in disguise.
Very good. Sadhu to you,
LC. I mean, without Dharma understanding, I think I will feel miserable.
Yeah,
also.
Not easy.
But the whole situation, we remain very calm. And then even we advise our daughter to do repentance.
Yeah.
To do repentance and also... to make expiration for the guy to accept, you know, with understanding,
and
then to move on with life.
So
it's
just let things be, let it evolve. Yeah, it has happened. Condition things will be like that. So let things be. Then see how it evolves. Looks like it could be a blessing in disguise. Nobody knows. The most important thing, let your doctor make that decision with her life. So your duty as parent is to advise. Very good, Elsie Sadhu. Thank you so much for sharing such what they call normally people won't share. But for you, this is very good, Sadhu. Anything else?
Just because of this diary issue that triggered the whole thing.
Don't worry, it's already passed, the issue over already. No need to feel anything. What has happened already happened. Like that, things will be like that. And just move on. No need to go and think about it. Yes. Sometimes it's meant to be, will be.
it's true.
So don't worry. Thank you so much. Then let us rejoice with all the good sharing by Tammy and also Elsie. Sadhu.